You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to The Salacious Show. I'm so excited to introduce to you my guest today. Where do I even freaking begin? You guys, he has done it all. Actor, singer, dancer, writer, producer. Star. He was starring in Phantom of the Opera for the 30th anniversary, which I saw on the Town Revival, original cast in the revival of Hair, Hands on a Hard Body, Catch Me If You Can. Of course, there's Scotland, PA, Darling Grenadine. There's also the concerts he's performed at Carnegie Hall. Have you heard of that place? Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, Hollywood Bowl. Oh yeah, and Tokyo's Theater Orb. Maybe you know him from Quantico, starring opposite Priyanka Chopra for 3 seasons. And do y'all know Todrick Hall? He's been on this show before. In Straight Out of Oz, my guest did a duet with him called Color. And it's good. It is so beautiful. And I remember watching it the first time and being like, oh, who's Todrick with? And not knowing who he was doing the duet with. But I didn't know him then, but I do now. And I officially clocked him in to my girls at Second Stage Theater here in New York. And also there's the epic annual benefit concert and dance party that benefits the Ali Forney Center called I Put a Spell on You, Witches Era. He created it, wrote it, produced it, started it. It's freaking phenomenal. He is freaking phenomenal. And something that I notice with my own eyes is that even when he's surrounded by a million people under a lot of pressure, under a lot of stress, he still finds a way to make everybody feel like they are the most important person in the room. You guys, I am so proud to introduce to you Jay Armstrong Johnson.
Felicia, I'm like literally teary-eyed right now. That was so kind.
I mean, it's literally you. That is you. I cannot believe it. Like, I still can't believe it. I'm like a peon in the show and you just checking in on me one-on-one. I'm like, wait, what? And then while it's all happening, it was a production. There was at least 100 people in that room when we were doing tech.
We had a little over 100 personnel on I Put a Spell on You this year. Yeah.
Wild. Jay, who the heck are you? Where the freak did you come from?
I mean, well, with I Put a Spell on You, it was our 8th anniversary last year. So I had done it for 8 years, right? So it started at 54 Below as like a tiny little cabaret with like some costumes, right? And then we were like, okay, maybe we can add some choreography to it. So we went to Le Poisson Rouge in the village and we did it there for a couple of years. And, you know, so it's grown and my team has stayed with me and more team members have come on board and everyone's there for a really incredible cause. The Ali Forney Center is such a beautiful organization doing so much good in the LGBTQ world. So yeah, I mean, I started it for fun with friends and 9 years later, it's grown into this event that's, you know, helping.
It's big. I feel like it's like Broadway Bears, except Halloween.
Yeah, when I first did Broadway Bears, I was like nervous about it because I was like, okay, this is just some like sex show. Like, yeah, I kind of judged it from afar until I was asked to do it 1 year. And the way I felt such love and such community, the reason why I did theater is because it was this community of people that were like me all coming together for something, for a cause, for a show, for a thing. And so when Bears was a big inspiration for I Put a Spell on You, actually.
You know, that's like when I said Broadway Bears, I forgot about the no clothes part. I was thinking like the whole, okay, everyone knows after the Tony Awards, this other big thing is happening. And that right. is, that to me is what it felt like. Have you ever been afraid of anything? Because I, in terms of even just growth, sometimes we can be afraid of our own growth. And there's no mm-hmm. way it started how it is now. When you mm-hmm. saw it growing, like, were you ever like, no, I can't do this? Or no, let's double down. How did you navigate?
I've always said that my biggest fear is failure. But when your energy is placed in the fear part, then you will inevitably fail, right? So my mantra that I've told myself and every person around me that's like, so do you have any advice? Is if you are making any decisions based on fear, it's probably not it. But if you're making decisions based on love, that's probably it. So even if the love part seems scary and insurmountable and something that you can't attain, you know that's the choice to go with, because fear will just lead you down that path. You know what I mean?
I mean, heck yeah. I mean, I felt that, but hearing you say it, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's...
And someone told me that, or I heard it on a podcast, or I don't even remember when I heard make choices out of love and not fear. It just really stuck with me, and it's been helpful in times of struggle,
Okay. And I probably will want to come back to, like, how did you find the Ali Forney Center?
Right.
That's the first time I heard about it. It's through you.
Oh, thank God. The first time I had heard about them was when Broadway Cares introduced me to them. So like, I've been such a close friend of Broadway Cares for the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, doing events like Broadway Bears and Broadway Barks and Broadway Backwards and, you know, raising money for that incredible organization. So I worked with them the first 2 years of the pandemic. We did a virtual event of I Put a Spell on You. And then we also worked with them 2 years ago when we were first at Sony Hall. So they were the force. They were, I loved them from all of their other things they did. And I like begged them to take on I Put a Spell on You as their annual Halloween event. And they did for 3 years. And then they have a great relationship with the Ali Forney Center and thought that they would just be a better fit for the show. It is a very queer forward show. It's a very campy show.
And
so they gifted I Put a Spell on You to the Ali Forney Center, knowing that it was a team there that was like kind of hungry and ready for that kind of development. And so it was a gift from Broadway Cares that we got to be with Ali Forney Center.
So everybody in the room is like, okay, we all know Jay. Everyone is here for, like... It is so cool to see everybody just pouring their soul into everything, and you especially. And most of the time you were like in half draft, like in tech, you're like, you're like slowly getting into the Hocus Pocus. What's the character name?
Winifred.
Yes, Winifred. It's like you're, as the day is going on, leading up to the night, you're like slowly getting all the way into character, and to see like you dealing with so many things from so many angles. I'm trying to pinpoint your source of magic. How do you stay so grounded when you have literally, you've got the voices in your head and you've got over 100 people around you needing things, asking things, tech things happening?
I think because it started so small, and it started with some of my best friends in the world that I've done theater with since I was 12, we just wanted to put on a fun show, right? I had done a solo show at 54 Below, and we like did a crowdsource campaign to do a live album, and we were gonna release the album in October, and I love Halloween, and I've always wanted to be Winifred. So I just decided, to make my album release party a Halloween party. So we got dressed in Halloween costumes and sang songs from my album and like some fun, spooky songs just thrown in. So that's just how it started, with like people I'm very close with, like friends of mine since I was 12, right? And so I've wanted to maintain that level of intimacy and love, which is why my two girls, Amanda Williams Ware and Allison Robinson Godblesky, are always with me, because they're home to me. And so I have this base of home that helps keep me grounded as it grows, right? Because I do want to work with the Salisha Thomases and with the Robin Herders, and I want to get heavy hitters and stretch myself creatively. But I also want to remember, like, why I started it. And that, right. And that's to have fun with my friends, right? So if we're not having fun, something's wrong. Sure, things can be stressful, and they definitely are at times. But if it's not fun, why are we doing it?
Why are we doing it? To have like your childhood alongside with you. I love that. And like one of your friends was very pregnant. Like her swing was truly on standby, like per scene, because she was about to give birth.
She was about to give birth. She was so big during that show.
She was big.
She was 8 months pregnant at that point, I think.
Oh my God.
And it was her first pregnancy. And you know, like when she told me she was pregnant, she said, "Jay, I'm pregnant." And I freaked out. And she's like, "And my follow-up question is, can I still be an I Put a Spell on You?" She's like, I will be 8 months pregnant, but I am so down. I was like, absolutely. Like, we will make this happen if you want to do it as a pregnant woman.
You know, like you're breaking down barriers and walls without you even trying. Like, that's a big deal and a big source of stress for people like me who I'm like newly married. I'm like, could I get pregnant and still work? Like, watching as many scenarios as I can play out in the Broadway industry is so encouraging, because it's like, can you do both? Can you still like do the projects that you signed up for? And sometimes the answer is no under certain circumstances.
And that's okay.
But like, it is encouraging to see people working while pregnant, people hiring others.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was very inspiring. I want to say, first of all, wait, I saw that you went to NYU. But not Tisch. You went to Steinhardt?
Yeah. I was a vocal major. I was like a music vocal performance major.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So I had danced all through my childhood. I was a dance major at my performing arts high school. And so I knew I had a solid base of movement and I wanted to play roles. And so my dance teacher actually had a daughter that went to Steinhardt and did the vocal program. So I like had this person that came before me that also had been on Broadway. I was like, okay, that's smart. So I just followed Meryl West's footsteps. And so I got like a solid vocal training in my like 2.5 years that I spent at NYU.
That is so, so freaking cool. I don't ever hear about people talking about that.
The music major route is just so different, right? Like it's not a BFA, like, you know, the dance program is not as good, the acting training is sometimes not as good, right? So it's a different approach for sure.
I mean, you still got all the training that you needed because you've done so many things. In fact, you didn't, did I read this right, that you didn't finish school because you got picked up on the freaking national tour of A Chorus Line?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't even think I said it in the intro. There's like a lot of things I didn't even get to in your intro. You've done, and also I don't think I mentioned Parade. Like,
oh, I miss it.
Done so freaking much. How was Parade? It looks like your heart just.
Parade was one of the more important pieces of theater I've ever been a part of, and I think it's because of the vibe that Michael Arden creates in a rehearsal room. It was one of the safest, most open, most grounded, most humanizing process I've ever been a part of. And that's, you know, and he knew we had an uphill battle because the subject matter of the show is just so hard to swallow. And we were also going through a lot as a country in terms of anti-Semitism while mounting this show. So he knows that before we start each day, we have to look at each other in the eyes as humans and share if we need to share. And, you know, before we start the hard work, so that we were like realizing, okay, so-and-so walked in, she has a new baby at home. She's away from her baby right now. She's feeling it. She's going to express that to the circle. And we're going to know that as we move forward in our work. Right. So it's like, we're humans, not machines. And I think that Michael Arden setting that beautiful tapestry for the, on which we were able to create the show is why it felt so heart affirming. And then we were a critical hit and like a commercial hit, right? Like, so all of the stuff that's great that you love to be a part of, which is like, it was, why are we here, right? Michael Arden is the best.
That is a dream. But you guys also had some, like you said, the anti-Semitism, there were some picketers at the beginning, right? which is
protesters. Earth? Yeah.
What white did you guys, protester. How did you respond to that? That is out of this world.
It was tough. It was really tough, but the energy we created within our cast, that safety, we were there for each other. Right. And people were making their Broadway debuts. It was the first preview. So, and we had,
oh my God,
very young people in the cast where this was their Broadway debut, right? Their first show on Broadway. It's scary outside.
So yeah. Like,
to have each other, to lean on each other, it was hard. It was wild. We like couldn't actually understand what was going on, but it made our job so much more important, right?
Yeah.
Let's do the work. This is why we need to do this work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so wild, making your Broadway debut and that's happening outside. I can't even imagine all of the rush of emotions. I remember seeing that online somewhere and being like, what? About in New York?
Right.
How?
Unreal. Unreal. And really, it was just more publicity for us. So thank you for that. Thank you for not being violent. And thank you for giving us more publicity. Cheers.
Absolutely. Abso-freaking-lutely.
Wow.
Out of all of the projects, okay, this is a two-part question. Out of all the projects that you've done, I know you've done a lot. What has been the most special one to you? Oh, wait, I know that's a big, should I say your favorite, your closest cast? How about that? Your closest cast.
It's both. I'm answering both, and it's my Broadway debut, The Revival of Hair in 2008. It was 2009? Yeah.
My husband won't let me do the show. Okay, that's off the record. That's off the record. I've always wanted to do Hair my whole life. Please tell me about it.
First of all, that cast, they are the closest cast I've ever had. We still have a text thread that is 14, 15 years deep. Every single day. I'm not kidding. Every day. I will sometimes have 37 missed text messages and I look back on my phone and it's the tribe. It's so fun. We are so close in a beautiful way. And it's because of the show. I mean, that was before marriage equality was passed. So we were being protesting hippies on stage and we were also in the streets of New York rallying for gay marriage, right? Our producers let our show close down for two shows on a Saturday so that we could take a bus to Washington, D.C. to march on Washington for marriage equality, right?
What?
So yeah, it was life meets art. I mean, we were really out there making change. Gavin Creel with Broadway Impact, I mean, he started Broadway Impact so the Broadway community had a space to then fight for marriage equality. Like that was Gavin. The man I have idolized since I was 14 years old is my leader and I'm his understudy. And this is what I'm watching him do as a leader of a Broadway show to affect change in the community. Like, right? The Hair and Parade. Like, I don't know how I got so lucky to do those two very specific, beautiful, life-affirming shows, but that's what they have been for me. Yeah.
Can you walk me through Baby J? You grew up in Texas.
Texas, honey. Fort Worth, Texas.
Shut up right now. I got some family in Texas myself and some Arkansas family. So I do understand a little bit, but my accent is still bad.
It was good. It was good, though.
For a second, it dropped.
It fell off just for a hot second, but it was good for the majority. I heard the Arkansas, too.
Did you hear the Arkansas?
Yeah, I did.
So walk me through Baby J growing up, finding out who he is, and then eventually landing in this musical theater, this acting world. Mm. Was it easy for you? Was it hard for you? Were people accepting, doing that in Texas? Like, what?
I mean, Texas in the 90s and early 2000s were not so great for a queer person. And they could smell it on me before I even realized I was queer. I didn't know I was queer until I was 15, right? But I was bullied and regularly from like third grade all the way to when I like left public school system to go to a performing arts high school. Like that's when my life got great, right? But like it was hard. And I was that artistic boy that loved listening to Reba McEntire and doing sachets in his living room. Like I was the little boy breaking into his grandmother's closet and trying on all of her muumuus and her sparkle fucking shoulder padded jacket and her heels. Like that just was me. And I had to keep it hidden because machismo, Texas world, you know, like,
how do you keep that hidden though? Because it's so loud. It wants to be loud. You being yourself, you're so sparkly, Jay. Your personality, your soul.
Well, what's wild is that I don't think I actually leaned into my true queerness until I put a spell on you. When I gave myself the permission to get dressed in drag for the first time is when I was like, oh my God, I'm here, right? And it's been a progression since then. And like, I didn't even start kind of dressing more non-binary until like the last year when I'm like, right, this is me. I'm just playing in my grandmother's closet. That's who I am, you know? So it's been a journey. And, you know, Texas has come such a long way. Like I go back home and there's so many queer spaces and I feel safe. And like a Starbucks barista hit on me the other day. And I was like,
in Texas? In
Texas, honey. So like, and Fort Worth is a pretty liberal. I mean, it's like 50-50, but we did go blue in the last election. Which
Okay. We'll take it.
But yeah, I love how far Texas has come and how I feel more safe going home these days than I did as a kid.
Okay. That is, and it's a beautiful thing to watch somebody. I think when you are able to live your fullest expression of yourself, people who are coming behind you, who are younger than you, sometimes older than you, they see you doing that, it gives them permission to also be themselves.
Yeah. Todrick Hall was that for me. I met Todrick when I was 15 years old. We did Mary
Kay
Cosmetics Industrials together in Dallas, Texas. Yeah. That's how I met Todrick. So me watching Todrick, who was a couple years older than me, like the way that that sparkly human like soars through the world, right? Like I saw a very special human that was also openly queer before I could actually be, right? So it was when I started, and he, with what the name he's made for himself on YouTube and with his music and like his—
And beyond.
Yeah, like I look to that and be like, it's actually wild what he's created. And I know I have that in me. It's not on the level that Todrick is, because the lyricist in him, the musician in him, like he's unreal. I have it in different spaces, but
yeah, you're both phenomenal.
I love him.
Color, can we talk about that for a second? It turned out really freaking beautiful. I was watching it with like tears welling up.
It's just a very good tune. Like he wrote a really good song, right? Like to the bop of it all. But then the lyrics and the statement and you know, like on top of the amazing song, just like, is this a perfect song? Like, is this giving me Mariah Carey's Always Be My Baby for us? You know what I mean? Like, is this a perfect song? You
know? Not to mention the tech aspect of like the colors coming in and like talking about the black and the white. It's just really, it is so beautiful. It really, really is so special.
I was so honored when he asked me and he sent me the demo and I was like, whoa, like truly blew my mind. I'm so happy about it.
It was cool watching it the second time, being like, wait, I know the both of them. And I love the both of them.
Wait, how do you know Todrick?
We did Hairspray back in 2012 in California.
Oh right, is it at Kathy Rigby's theater?
Yeah. No.
No.
Down the street from there, though. It was at 3D Theatricals in Southern. It was still Southern California, but yeah.
It was still SoCal. Right.
Yes, and I remember that was he was like famous then, but not on the level he is now. And that was like I remember him like looking at the playbill to like initial that his name was spelled right, and then him penciling it in over the title. I'm like, way to manifest, because it's a real thing. Right. I love being surrounded by people who have big dreams. Sometimes people are intimidated by those people, but if you look at life not from the eyes of competition, but collaboration, it really is a beautiful thing when you see the people around you shining and like doing the thing. if you take competition out of it, you can go so much further.
You're so right, Felicia. I mean, that's been my whole 20s was trying to break through that kind of thinking, right? Like when I would walk into rooms and I'd see the Jeremy Jordans and the Aaron Tveits and the Corey Cotts of the world and just being like, you've got to get it over them. No, like, no, you're not them, you're you. Like, and so being a producer is like, you can't be competition focused because you need 100 other people around you. Yeah. Helping you pull this thing up, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And the more people who you know who are cooler than you,
right,
the better it's going to turn out if you're putting all the pieces together.
Right. The people I trust on I Put a Spell on You, it's wild trust, right? They're so good at what they do and they're there for the right reasons and they go above and beyond. And it's, you know,
it's crazy to hear that you were like had that competition mindset at some point. Like we all did. Some of us still do, you know. But to see this beautiful thing that you have made yourself, and you are the star. Like you're the star. You are the star. And there is no like people have their own lanes. And everyone's on their own treadmill and wants different things. It's not like okay, this is the one goal, and whoever gets there first is the winner. No, it's like. Well, you might get there, but what if that's not what you actually want? That then you're not even going to be happy. Like,
right. And you came in it in the eighth year, right? So you came in a well-oiled machine. Like
it was oiled. Okay. Yeah. It was oiled down. I'm like, who is this person?
And what's funny is if I could sit here for the next half hour and tell you the things that went wrong that day. You know what I mean? Like my Virgo brain. The things that didn't actually happen that should have happened, you know, like, and that's just,
I felt like the day went, like the night went so perfect. It was like sold out. Everybody was on their feet having a blast. And the only time I knew something was going wrong in tech was when you were extra calm. I'm like, wait a minute. That's cool. And what a great, I'm so glad you're that guy. You are that guy. You're not the I'm going to throw my laptop at you guy.
I almost threw a laptop this year. Almost got there. There was one moment where I just couldn't. And DW, my costume designer, grabbed me. And my assistant, Joe Hornberger, grabbed me. And they said, this is not the time. And so I went. And I sat on the stage for 10 minutes and did deep breathing. And then went back to work.
Oh my god. Okay, I have a rapid round for you.
Okay.
Would you rather originate a role or be a replacement?
Originate a role.
Would you rather have a fast run in a new show or be in the same role like a Lion King for like 18 years? Not Lion
fast
King.
Run in a new show.
Have you swung?
Yes.
Would you do it again?
No.
Understudying. Love it or hate it?
Hate it.
TV or Broadway?
Do television to support my Broadway habit.
Ooh. Taxi or train?
Taxi.
For the red carpet, style yourself or be styled?
A collaboration.
Ooh. When given the option, when you're on the red carpet for interviews, do you love the interviews or would you rather skip it?
I'm going to say love because I am fearful of interviews, but I will not make the choice to not do them because I'm fear them. I will do them. Love
you're
them.
So good at them. Them. You're so good at them. Why would you be afraid of them?
You know, because you have to be yourself. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm on stage, I'm playing a character. That ain't me. Like, this is literally just me, right?
Yeah, but half of the time when you're a producer, you are yourself and people love you, Jay.
I know. We're still working through it. My therapist and I work together every week.
And I have to be myself. Okay, that was most of the lightning round. Will you stay in New York forever? Are you in New York now?
Yeah, I think that New York will always be my home base.
Biggest life hack.
Biggest life hack. Meditation. Save my life. Save my life. Mm-hmm.
Have you always meditated or did you find it in the pandemic or?
I found it when I had my very first lead on Broadway. I was doing On the Town. And for the first time in my life, I was feeling debilitating stage fright in a way that was hindering my performance. And I talked to my friend Megan Fairchild of the New York City Ballet. She also played Ivy Smith in On the Town. And, you know, she's a prima ballerina at the New York City Ballet. And so that's a lot of pressure. And she told me that she used to have fainting spells because she was so nervous. And it was transcendental meditation that helped get her back on course. So I spent some money, took a course on transcendental meditation, got a guru and a mantra. And I showed up with fresh fruit and flowers, and we had a whole ceremony. I learned how to meditate. I read a whole book on it, and it has been a game changer.
Transcendental meditation?
Yeah.
Do I need to take a class?
I mean, you can, and they have a discount for artists, right? They give artists student discount because they consider artists to always be students of the world.
Great.
Which is amazing. But yeah, I went to the David Lynch Foundation. Yes, that David Lynch, the like famous film director. And I had worked with David's daughter on Quantico. She directed a few episodes of me on Quantico. And so it's like, yep, like the universe just being like, yep, right? So nice. That's where I went through. And they have David Lynch Foundation centers all over the world, hundreds of them. But definitely one here in New York, in most big cities.
That's so exciting. I'm like, is it different than regular meditation?
I guess it is. I mean, it's like, is it Meissner or is it Stanislavski? Right? It's like meditation is meditation. And so I think there are many ways to approach it, but it is a very specific practice for sure.
Mm. And it's need quiet. To look into that.
Well,
for
what I
sure.
love about it. Is that it has to be in silence and quiet. It's not guided. It's you, honey. Like, you are driving this boat. So, like...
Turn your phone off.
Right. Turn your phone off. We're not even going to be listening to someone that's going to guide us through this. You are going to guide yourself through this, right? So it's like, it gets deeper, right?
Thank you for sharing that. Like, for real.
Yeah. Absolutely. Changed my life.
Because... The meditations I've been going through are like, I finally have come to the point where I'm like, I wish I didn't need to use my phone.
Sure. And like, I love guided meditations, use them a lot, particularly when I don't have the 20 minutes to devote to transcendental meditation, because really it's 20 minutes at the beginning of the day and 20 minutes at the end of the day. And so when I only have 5 minutes, I'll be like, okay, a guided meditation will be great right now. And I just sit, or I'll give myself the 5 minutes, but it doesn't take full effect unless you do the full 20. I read the whole book. It's a whole thing.
Okay. I'm here for that. Thank you so much. And I might ask follow-ups when we get off of this thing.
Please.
We're going to wrap it up very soon, but I would love to hear, and I can't imagine you actually being rejected from anything, but the times that you might have been in the past, how do you handle rejection?
It is not rejection. It was simply an opportunity for me to make a connection that will help me down the road, right? Like, I was doing the workshops prior to this new Gatsby that's going to Broadway. I did two of them as Jay Gatsby. So excited. First titular role on Broadway, I thought, like, okay, I'm set, we're ready, we're about to do this. But the producer did not know who I was as an artist and didn't think I had the commercial ability that a Broadway show needs. So I was not kept with the project. Devastating? Yes. Did I allow myself to cry for a full 24 hours? Absolutely. But after then, we move on. I know the director liked me. I know the composer liked me. I know the book writer liked me. I know my fellow artists, right? I did good work in that room.
Yeah.
Who knows what could come down the road, right? So it's not rejection. It's a speed bump and onwards.
Oh my God. I know. Like, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like people ask me that all the time, and it's hard to answer the question, especially when you're on a high, because it's like, oh, you know, it's this, it's that, it's easy. But sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it is hard and it sucks. And so thank you. And also for people who are listening, if you're getting into acting or really anything in life, you're not alone. You're not alone. Even the people who you look up to face rejection. It's you're never alone in that. And sometimes it can feel so lonely. So thank you for sharing that. What about your biggest pinch me moment in this career, this amazing career that you've had? You've done so freaking much.
I would probably say doing Sweeney Todd with Emma Thompson and Audra McDonald, film for PBS, live at Lincoln.
What was that? Like, I saw that somewhere. What?
Pinch me. It was one of the Lonnie Price concerts. You know, he's directed symphonic orchestra concerts of Sweeney Todd like two or three times, and this was one of those times. And I remember being up against Justin Guarini for my role and being like, not gonna get this. You know what I mean? Like, this is like closer to American Idol, right? Like,
oh my God.
For sure. And someone vouched for me on that team. I don't even really know. No, I do know. I did an off-Broadway show called Working, making like $400 a week with this incredible group of artists. And that's where I got to meet Lin-Manuel Miranda and Stephen Schwartz. And so doing that show, living in Bump, Queens, like in a basement, no windows, cell block of a apartment where I had a 15, 20 minute walk to the train every day, right? So like,
right.
That part of my life, I didn't realize that doing Working was going to then translate into me doing Sweeney Todd and with the New York Philharmonic at Lincoln Center, filmed for PBS with Emma Thompson, because the director, Lonnie Price, saw Working, right? And that's how I got that audition. So like one of the hardest and like least paying jobs of my career actually is the reason why I got to where I am now. Right? Weird.
It's those things. I'm like, you never know. You never know what's going to be the gig that leads to the gig. You don't know.
You don't know. So just do the work. Just have fun. Be a good human and do good work. that's all your job is, really.
Can I ask you a random, I'm sorry. Now this is an actual tangent and if I need to edit this out, I will.
Please.
Can I ask you your opinion? This is very so random. Your thoughts on not knowing the future. So I lie awake at night thinking about Brian D'Arcy James being the king in Hamilton and then choosing something rotten. What are your thoughts on choosing when you have options and you don't know what's going to happen with the shows?
That has only happened to me once in my career, and it was the choice between an ensemble contract and a principal contract. So of course I went with the principal contract, right? You know what I mean? But like, I've not been given that kind of choice before, so I don't even really know how to answer it. But it's whatever your gut tells you to do. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I would go back to the fear and love thing. Okay, what is the fear-based decision here? What is the love-based decision here?
Yes.
And so Brian was probably like, you know what? I want to lead a Broadway show. I want to do my comedy, dance, musical theater chops. Like, that's probably just why he chose it, not kind of realizing.
I know. And he was great in Something Rotten. I loved something. Like, in his defense, I loved Something Rotten. I loved that show.
And also, I believe Brian was part of that last workshop / the public theater run, and so he gets a piece of that pie, right? Like, he right, so like, he's probably still getting paid. This is a conjecture.
Maybe everything is okay then.
This is a conjecture, but I'm wondering, you know what I mean?
I mean okay, sorry, that was a total tangent. I just wanted to hear your opinion.
No, I love it.
Final question before I let you go have dinner and enjoy your night.
I'd be here for another hour, I promise.
I could keep you for another hour, which is why I'm like, I have to let him go. 30,000 foot view of J. Armstrong Johnson. Where are you headed? What do you want? Where do you see yourself going? What, like, do you want to be movie star, big producer, Broadway till you die? Who is Jay in 20 years, 30 years, next year?
The overall answer is yes. I want to do all of those things. And I realized that if I give myself like specific goals, like not just like, I want to play a lead on Broadway, but like, I want to play this lead in this show. Like, if you give yourself specific goals, then you can work toward them easier because they seem more tangible. I don't know. So my biggest specific goal is to host the Tony Awards. I want to be able to have a platform big enough that a major network will entrust me to host my favorite night of the year. The thing that like brought me as much joy as a child. You know what I mean? Like, so like, I know that there's so much work that has to get done between now and that moment, which is why it's just like, okay, continue to produce. Okay, continue to go in for that. Okay, let's try TV. Right. So like, I've got a long ways to go, but that's my tangible overall goal.
I mean, I can see that.
Oh, I love you for saying that.
I mean, who cares what I can see or not, but I'm like, that does not seem impossible for you.
Thanks, Alicia. I'll take that. I'm going to breathe that in.
Breathe that all the way in. And when that happens, whether I am in the orchestra section or at the back of the balcony or watching from TV, I just know I will be crying for you. I will be in tears. I will be replaying this clip and be like, you guys, this is what he wanted. He did it.
Oh my God, you'll be right up there with me leading whatever Broadway show you're nominated for that year.
Listen, I'll be saying, okay, the nominees are.
Yes, girl.
Don't say the wrong name, Salish. Thank you so much for spending the hour with me. You are so amazing. You are just a light in this world. You being you is so on fire. It's so sparkly. It is so bright. You shine so bright. Jay, you shine so bright. Even before I've realized who you are, I've enjoyed you. Like, before I knew that I was going to know you in Phantom or watching you in To My Girls, which, by the way, we thought we were seeing Take Me Out. And then my friend was like, I feel like this is a different show. And then Noah took his shirt off and I was like, we're fine. Let's stay. We'll stay.
We're not seeing dick tonight, but it's at least a male body that's really nice to look at.
We'll be okay. You're phenomenal in that. You're phenomenal in real life. You're from the stage to being in person. You have something very special. You have something extremely special inside of you. And the best part is that the unseen world, I don't know what you believe in or what you don't believe in, but they know that they can trust you and use you, because you don't just sit on your ideas. You get them out of your head and you birth them into the world. And that is what the spiritual world needs. They need vessels who will do something with these awesome ideas instead of just thinking about it over and over and spinning themselves and then being mad when somebody else takes the idea. You actually do something with it. And so this is just the beginning for you. You have a whole life ahead of you to make a difference in the world and people's lives, whether you know it or not. So I am so rooting for you. You've got cheerleaders, whether you know it or not, rooting you on. All the just a praise hands to you. So thank you for coming on my show.
No, thank you for having me. This is a very life-affirming moment, and I really appreciate everything that you've said, and just know that I echo it back to you tenfold. You know, we're in this together, girl.
Thank you. Thank you. Absolutely. How can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at JAY_A_Johnson, because I want to make your life miserable. and that's really kind of where I am these days. I mean, you can go to my website, jarmstrongjohnson.org, and also check out the Alec Forney Center, and come see I Put a Spell on You this October. We haven't announced the date yet, but it's going to be on the 21st of October. And we haven't announced the venue yet, which I can't actually announce yet, which is exciting.
Okay.
Okay, but that's me. I'm Jay, and I'm really happy that you asked me to do this.
Thank you for joining. And that wraps another episode of Black Hair in the Big League. Y'all, I'm so honored to have such great guests on this show. And if there's somebody who you want to listen to, please drop me a note on my Instagram at Salisha Thomas or at Black Hair Podcast and slip into those DMs and let me know what you want to hear, who you want to hear from. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast, rate it, leave a review, tell a friend, follow us on Patreon at Black Hair in the Big Leagues. Y'all, I'm so grateful that you are part of this community. It would not be the same without you. Shout out to Wilton Music for producing my theme song, Love COD. Shout out to Colin Tabor for editing this episode and most of these episodes. And shout out to you for listening. Y'all, my heart is so big and I feel so grateful. Thank you for listening to Black Hair in the Big Leagues. I'm your host, Salisha Thomas. See you next week.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.